Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We continue our look at Section 89 in the Doctrine and Covenants, a section that is known as the Word of Wisdom. It is a Mormon health code. Today we begin looking at verse 14.
It says, "All grain is ordained for the use of man and a beast, to be the staff of life, not only for man, but for the beasts of the field, and the fowls of heaven, and all wild animals that run or creep on the earth." Verse 15, "And these hath God made for the use of man only in times of famine and excess of hunger."
Now, we need to point out that verse 15, when it talks about for the use of man only in times of famine and excess of hunger, is no doubt a connection with verse 13 that talks about the flesh also of beasts and of fowls of the air that the Lord says should be used sparingly. And then verse 13, of course, says, "And it is pleasing unto me that they should not be used only in times of winter or of cold or famine."
Verse 16 says, "All grain is good for the food of man, as also the fruit of the vine, that which yieldeth fruit, whether in the ground or above the ground."
And then it goes on to verse 17, and though there really is not a whole lot of controversy other than the connection with eating meat sparingly and only in times of winter or cold or famine, but then it goes on in verse 17 and we run into another controversy.
It says, "Nevertheless, wheat for man and corn for the ox and oats for the horse and rye for the fowls and for swine and for all the beasts of the field and barley for all useful animals and for mild drinks as also other grain."
Now, there's the controversy, that last portion, barley, and barley for all useful animals and for mild drinks. Some have said that could be talking about beer. And in fact, we know that if you were to study the early history of Salt Lake City, there were a lot of breweries in Salt Lake City. In fact, there's a zoo over by the This Is the Place monument that used to be the Henry Wegner Brewery, a very large brewery that was there for many years. Now, it's been long gone, but that's where it was located, was in that area. But let's talk about this. When it says barley for all useful animals and for mild drinks, we've been citing a book called The Word of Wisdom, A Modern Interpretation by Mormon Apostle John A. Witzo, John Andreas Witzo. And he tackles this issue of whether or not the barley mentioned in verse 17, connected with mild drinks, is connected with beer. He insists that is not the case. He says on page 224, "Many people claim that since barley as a drink is mentioned in the Word of Wisdom, it must refer to beer, for barley as malt is used therein. Certainly, that cannot be the meaning, for when grain is fermented, alcohol is formed, and alcohol is explicitly forbidden." Well, that's not necessarily how it was interpreted by all Mormon leaders. In fact, there was an article that was in a publication called Dialogue, a Journal of Mormon Thought. And in this particular article, what does it say? What's the title?
Yeah, the title of it's called The Word of Wisdom, From Principle to Requirement, and it was written by Thomas G. Alexander in 1980, and this is volume 14, number 3, and at the bottom of page 78, it says this, "Though it is clear that some church leaders like Heber J. Grant and Joseph F. Smith insisted upon complete abstinence from tea, coffee, liquor, and tobacco, all general authorities were not in agreement on all aspects of the Word of Wisdom. During a discussion in 1900 after he became president of the church, Lorenzo Snow again emphasized the centrality of not eating meat, a point rarely emphasized by others. And in 1901, John Henry Smith and Brigham Young Jr. of the 12 both thought that the church ought not interdict beer, or at least not Danish beer. Other apostles like Anthon H. Lund and Matthias F. Cowley also enjoyed Danish beer and currant wine. Charles W. Penrose occasionally served wine. Emmeline B. Wells, then a member of the presidency and later president of the Relief Society, drank an occasional cup of coffee. And George Albert Smith took brandy for medicinal reasons. Apostle George Teasdale, agreeing with President Woodruff, thought that no one ought to be kept from working on the Sunday school because he drank tea and that eating pork was a more serious breach than drinking tea or coffee. And the article goes on, but it shows about how many of these leaders didn't quite agree and everybody had their own interpretation of what the word of wisdom was.
Now, some of those men, of course, being officers in the church, you would think would have to adhere to the word of wisdom, but you make a good point. If they don't really know what the word of wisdom is actually saying, how do they follow it? And so we do have this controversy, this interpretation controversy, if you will, among some of the leaders in the church, wondering what is prohibited and what is not prohibited. Now, today, Mormons would say, well, now it's all been clarified. It's only been clarified mainly because it was Heber J. Grant. Heber J. Grant was the one behind making it mandatory that you follow the word of wisdom in order to get a temple recommend.
In fact, the article that I was just reading from goes on talking about Heber J. Grant, and it says he was particularly outraged at the church members who served liquor and at some of the 12 who opposed the prohibition of liquor at Salt Air. He was also concerned with the indifference some of the general authorities demonstrated to the feelings of Protestant ministers who complained about the Salt Air saloon. He later goes and closes that saloon, and it says in the article, to the relief and ecstasy of the Protestant ministers who had tried very hard to get this saloon closed, and finally the Mormon church went ahead and did that.
Yeah, the Salt Air saloon was located downtown. People not knowing the history of Utah wouldn't even really know that, but the fact is, there's a controversy over this, folks. What is it talking about? Apparently, if Brigham Young Jr. and others thought that Danish beer was okay, then maybe they were pointing to this particular verse. I would say they probably were.
Now, isn't it true that Danish beer can have a higher concentration of alcohol anyway?
I wouldn't know. I've never drank Danish beer.
But here you have Brigham Young Jr., you have John Henry Smith, and Matthias F. Cowley, all of them enjoying Danish beer.
So what do you do with that? I would think that they're probably seeing that as an exemption when it comes into verse 17. We go on, and it says in verse 18, "And all saints who remember to keep and do these sayings, walking in obedience to the commandments, shall receive health in their navel and marrow to their bones." Now, do they get health in their navel and marrow to their bones by drinking the mild drink made of barley? Which, as we have pointed out, Brigham Young Jr. would say, what's wrong with that? And some others would have said, what's wrong with that? "And they shall find wisdom and a great treasures of knowledge, even hidden treasures." And that's a vague kind of a promise, wouldn't you say? What does that even mean? Shall find wisdom and great treasures of knowledge? You mean if I eat meat sparingly, if I don't drink hot drinks, I'm going to find wisdom and great treasures of knowledge, even hidden treasures? What does that even mean?
Well, I think a lot of Latter-day Saints would agree with verse 19 when it comes to the word of wisdom, but how many of them have actually read this entire section verse by verse in trying to understand some of these things? In yesterday's show, we were talking about eating meat only in times of winter or of cold or of famine, and yet we don't find that Mormons are abiding by this. If you go outside in the summertime here in the Utah area, you're going to smell at night, you're going to smell barbecues going on all over the place. And this is summertime when it says here very clearly, if you're going to take this literally, as I suppose it was meant to be taken when Joseph Smith compiled this back in 1833, then why are so many Latter-day Saints in my neighborhood barbecuing in the summer?
And then it goes on into verse 20 to say, "And they shall run and not be weary, and shall walk and not faint."
That verse is
clearly taken from Isaiah.
Right.
Okay. And having nothing to do with what you eat or drink or anything like that. And then verse 21, where it ends by saying, "And I, the Lord, give unto them a promise that the destroying angel shall pass by them as the children of Israel and not slay them." Well, what do you do with that, given the fact that Mormons tend to die just like anybody else? And what do you do with a Mormon who's been following very strictly according to the word of wisdom and they end up dying? What's going to be the argument that you would hear from a Latter-day Saint? It would be a very typical argument. Well, their time on earth is done. God's purpose for them is over, and now he's taken them home. Well, then what do you do with this promise here about a destroying angel that shall pass by them? I mean, do you really believe that everybody dies by a destroying angel? Is that how it operates? Also, let's look at page 211 in the Doctrine and Covenants Student Manual. This is Religion 324 and 325.
This is on page 211 in the heading. It says, DNC 8921, and I, the Lord, give unto them a promise. This is what President J. Reuben Clark Jr. explained the significance of this promise. He said, this does not say and this does not mean that to keep the word of wisdom is to ensure us against death, for death is, in the eternal plan, co-equal with birth. This is the eternal decree. But it does mean that the destroying angel, he who comes to punish the unrighteous for their sins, as he in olden times afflicted the corrupt Egyptians in their wickedness, shall pass by the saints who are walking in obedience to the commandments and who remember to keep and do these sayings. These promises do mean that all those who qualify themselves to enjoy them will be permitted so to live out their lives that they may gain the full experiences and get the full knowledge which they need in order to progress to the highest exaltation in eternity. All these will live until their work is finished, and God calls them back to their eternal home as a reward. And that's taken with J. Reuben Clark talking in General Conference, the conference report. That's from October 1940, pages 17 and 18. And then the manual ends this way, this section. It says, the greatest blessing for living the word of wisdom is that it keeps a person a pure vessel before the Lord, who can then bestow all his glorious blessings both in this world and in the world to come. If you listen to what Clark is saying, it sounds like if you're abiding by the word of wisdom, you should live a long life. What about all the Latter-day Saints who don't?
Well, I think that's a great question, and you're always going to find an exception to the rule. I just think it's questionable that this whole word of wisdom concept is really a revelation from God in the first place, because many of the points that are brought out in this so-called revelation are just common sense. And then you have other portions that really are not sensible at all. Now, a Mormon might look at this as some kind of faith-promoting section within the Doctrine and Covenants, but I don't think in all these areas you've got science really backing you up. And then, of course, some things would be very, very questionable, which tend to prove that Joseph Smith was perhaps, as we read earlier, instituted some of the things in the Word of Wisdom, particularly the hot drink prohibition against Emma Smith, who was the first to demand that he do something about the use of chewing tobacco in the Smith home.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Have you ever wondered how Mormonism and Biblical Christianity differ in their doctrine? MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson's 2015 revised and expanded edition of Mormonism 101 will help you see those differences. Published by Baker Books, Mormonism 101 cites LDS church leaders and official manuals and covers numerous topics, including the Bible, the Book of Mormon, grace and works, pre-existence, and the Second Estate, and the Trinity. If you've always wanted a concise yet complete guide that'll help you better understand the Mormon religion, then this book is for you. In fact, Sandra Tanner calls it a well-documented yet readable overview of the LDS religion. And during the month of June, for your donation of $35.01, we'd like to send you a personally autographed copy of Mormonism 101. Go to our website, mrm.org, and look for the article with the picture of the book on the main page. Then, make an electronic donation of $35.01. That extra penny will let us know that you want the book. Your donation will help MRM during their critical summer months and is greatly appreciated.